I believe in miracles.
Don't say people. I'm doing business here, man.
I don't want anybody tells you words and ideas can change the world.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. 90%
of what you're saying ain't coming out of your mouth.
From failing, you learn.
From success, not so much.
Keep moving forward.
Welcome to the Small Business Miracles Podcast. I'm Jeff Randolph. This small business podcast is brought to you by EAG Advertising and Marketing. We're going to talk about marketing, and we're also here to celebrate entrepreneurs. We have marketing news and advice that business owners can use to keep moving forward. This week, we sit down with Shanita McAfee Bryant. She's the executive director and founder of theprospectkc.org. But first, we've got another marketing business tip for you. In our tip today, we want to talk about how we prioritize our marketing and how we get the most bang for our buck in all of the things that we're doing, in all of that planning. Where do we get the most bang for our buck? What should we be testing? What should we be looking at? If we want to prioritize our marketing, we know we should be A/B testing some factor of our ads so that we use the best messages more frequently once we find out what those messages are. So it makes sense to test something. But what should we test? When we look at the variables, the media plan accounts for about 13% of the success of that campaign in terms of contribution to sales. So the media plan, that's what channel you want your ad to run in and how much money you're spending to do it. 13% of the contribution to sales. The other P's in marketing, marketing's famous four P's, like price and promotion and distribution, or place if you want to make it a P word, account for just 35% of that contribution to sales. So we've got a 13% in the media plan, and we've got 35% for all kinds of other things. Well, if you want to know what you should really focus on when it comes to testing, where you can make the most impact, test the ad quality, the ad itself, how it resonates with the audience, what gets them to click, what gets them to remember that ad. That ad itself accounts for 52% of the success in contributing to sales. So if you're going to save budget and time so you can do some testing, test that creative and it will have the biggest impact for you. That's our marketing tip. Welcome back to the podcast. I am here with Shanita McAfee Bryant. She is the executive director and founder of theprospectkc.org. Shanita, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you guys for having me.
We're
excited.
Yeah, we're here at the Prospect KC. We've Theo and I have already gotten our morning coffee. We're very excited to be here.
You guys are a step ahead of me.
Well, we can. I know we can find it for you if we had to.
Yes.
Let's talk about the Prospect KC. You have labeled it as a culinary social enterprise, and I want to get to all of the components of what makes that up. But give us the kind of overall vision of this place.
We are a customer facing 16-week workforce development program. So I like to say customer facing because when you are here ordering your coffee or getting your sandwich or your croissant or whatever, you have entered a live training environment.
Oh, man.
And 99% of the time, the person who is handling your food, taking your order, or making your coffee is one of our prospects or trainees. So that's in a nutshell.
If you had to boil it down to just the most intense version of that. So the spot is part of this. Mm-hmm. And so you may see the spot around sustainably sourced coffee shop and fresh grocer.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So we have the coffee, and then we are hopefully this summer we'll be able to. We kind of opened under gunfire last year. A lot of things that we wanted to do, we didn't get quite the way we wanted them. So we started our market. We have that with produce from Canby's, but you will see this summer some grab and go and some more items where people are able to get some healthy, nutritious meals that they could just heat and eat as well. So that'll kind of come into that.
Yeah.
There's some spices in there now. And then we have our cohort Alpha. That's our first cohort. They're developing some items that you can purchase on the shelves and things like that, granola. So that part is growing.
Excellent. Yeah. And you've also got the neighborhood account.
Mm-hmm.
So community members can enroll for grocery funds.
Yeah.
So
that is really simple. I was kind of thinking of like when my grandparents grew up and they were in this neighborhood when they first moved here, and there were corner markets and things like that. And sometimes you just didn't have it, right? And you could put it on your account and come back and settle up later.
Oh, gotcha.
But they were still going to let you get
your necessities. Still eat today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's that same premise, except for instead of our guests or community members having to come back and settle up, the community settles up for them. Oh, so they're able to get what they need. And it's not one of those kind of things where I've been places and they have programs like that. And it's like, you got to fill out a form and I need to know your blood type. Right. And can you put your first child up as collateral this sandwich that you absolutely need to eat? We're not trying to make it that way.
Yeah.
We've even, this summer, we plan on even expanding that program out to make it even easier. So at the register, you could just buy a meal right then if you wanted to. And then we'll have a board and people can just pull a voucher off the...
Pull a voucher and go.
And go in a very casual way. I don't like how sometimes within food access, people feel like you have to have no money in order to need access to food.
I have some money and so I really shouldn't take this or whatever.
Yeah, but sometimes you have some money and that money is, if we're being realistic, is allocated to other things. Mm-hmm. And healthy food might not be the thing that you can allocate your funds to. And so we don't want that to be a situation where you have to make a choice.
Yeah. The like food deserts or food apartheid are issues that you have kind of at your...
Yes. I'm more of a food apartheid girly and less of a food desert
less
girly.
Less of a food desert. Okay.
Yeah. Not a food desert person at all.
Talk to us about the food apartheid side of things.
So apartheid speaks to systems, right? Desert speaks to, it's a term that people get to use. It's like, for example, when you look at photos of the civil rights movement, right? Mm-hmm. And they're all in black and white. Well, that's because they want you to perceive that was a long time ago.
Gotcha.
My grandparents and my parents were born at that time. I have color pictures of them. So I know they had colored film during that time
frame. That was possible, but...
Same thing with a desert, right? Mm-hmm. When you say desert, it's like, oh, what could we possibly do about this?
Yeah.
There's absolutely nothing.
Okay.
When you speak to apartheid, we know that particularly when we get to the east side of Kansas City, this financial disinvestment was intentional, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we just say, let's just call it what it is.
Call it what it is.
We are in this situation because of intentionality by people who did not live in the neighborhood and really wanted it to be the way that it is. That's why I'm more of an apartheid girly.
And part of that, you've got the Kitchen Confidence Program, a workshop that helps fight food apartheid. Tell us more about that program.
So that came out of COVID. We launched a nonprofit January 13, 2020.
Oh, yeah. It was a good time to do that. It was
in January, in March.
Yep, in March.
Realized.
Different story.
All of our plans failed and we had to pivot into something else. I don't even like saying the word pivot. It's so traumatizing. I feel like for like a year and a half, I was perpetually pivoting.
I was pivoting so much that my pivot foot got really
pivoted.
Pivoted.
So,
right off my foot.
Yeah. So what we're trying to look at now, what we came out of that is dealing with food access does not mean giving people food.
Mm-hmm.
There's a next step to that, which comes with a nutritional education piece of it. And, you know, for a lot of people who have not had access to food, there's a shame factor in that. You know, you get shamed for buying your groceries at the Zip Mart as if people were like, forget Walmart, I'd rather go to the corner store.
Right?
In most cases, that's what's available.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to shop where it's available because there's not a lot of opportunities to get anywhere else. So with the confidence class, it's us really working on repairing that relationship that people have with food because for a lot of people, we've learned that it's a survival thing. I just need to live, so I'm going to eat something.
Yeah.
And not more of like a enjoyment factor. I want to think about what I'm going to eat. I just need to live, so I'm going to eat. So that's kind of where that came from. It's just working on people and understanding that, hey, you don't know because you don't know. And that's okay. But that's why we're here, to make this easy.
Right.
I have some chef friends who write recipes. I'm like, girl, who's going to make that? I don't want to make it, and I have the skill set.
You have 120 ingredients there.
There's a lot of steps. Yeah. Can you get that in about 6-7 steps?
That is an entire dishwasher full of
dishes.
Things that you will need to clean right afterward.
Yeah, no one's doing that. So we want to make it accessible. We want to make it easy. And then most importantly, we want to make it culturally appropriate. A lot of times people who are dealing with access issues rely on pantry systems.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a different food culture, you have a hard time really accessing the things that are special and near and dear and would be something that you grew up eating.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like exactly the right thing to help fight that food apartheid. Education is an important piece. Mm-hmm. I think if we can learn more, whether that's the poverty side of things where if I have one ingredient, mm-hmm. and I know what I can, like the billion things I could do with that ingredient, then I have a lot more opportunity to, you know, survive on just that one thing. But if
Absolutely.
I, you know, look at that giant, you know, cut of meat and go, I don't know, we could put it in the oven, and then my skill set doesn't have, I don't have enough tools to really get where I need to go.
Right. It works, but the education piece, I think sometimes people who are working in that space feel like education is one way, it's a one-way street. Mm-hmm. It's actually a two-way street, because in order for me to effectively teach someone something, I have to be willing to learn about what they need.
Oh, sure.
And then a lot of times in this food access space, we're more about telling people what they need and less about listening to what they need.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it has to be a little bit of both.
Man, I love the philosophies. Let me stay on this kind of philosophical piece for a second, because I want to talk Gumbo Fest.
Yeah.
On the one hand, it's a competition. You had your second annual competition in October of 2023, but it's also a philosophy. And the way I understand it, you were inspired by a book called The Gumbo Coalition that uses gumbo as a metaphor to bring together some of those diverse backgrounds. Tell us, dive into the competition, the metaphor,
when we look at this community, whenever I get to speak about what's happening, even just we're just going to narrow this down to the district, what's happening in the district. You think that it's just, people feel like it's one-sided, like there's residents here, there's businesses here, and you know, and that's a huge part of the gumbo. Mm-hmm. But you have to have like travelers here,
right,
who spend dollars. You have to have city support, you have to have large development or business support. So we're not going to be able to reinvest or revitalize this neighborhood if we're only relying on two pieces of the gumbo. That makes a very nasty gumbo. Like, you don't want to eat just the stock. You're like, okay, it's a brothy broth.
Right, right.
Thank you for, but no. Or you don't want to have just the Trinity or just the root. You kind of need all of those pieces in order to make something successful. And the beautiful part about gumbo is that there's 100 million different ways to make a gumbo, right? So no one person's particular gumbo is the exact way to do it. Yeah. You can do it all different kinds of ways and still come up with something that is tasty and beautiful. So that's kind of the philosophy behind Gumbo Fest, is really bringing people into the district for a family fun, positive time, and getting to showcase some of the art and some of the culture that's here to people who might not have even thought about coming down here before.
Excellent. I can't get out of like this interview section without saying, you won Cutthroat Kitchen.
I did.
Tell me about that experience and like what changed for you after that episode?
It was intense, and nothing changed.
nothing changed.
Not really. It was intense, and honestly, it was just more of like a personal journey for me. I think that all throughout my entrepreneurship, and just my chefdom. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a word.
Let's call it that. We're gonna say that. It's chefdom.
My chefdom, the person that I'm in most competition with is myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always looking for ways to challenge myself, push myself to the next level, and be the best version of me that I could possibly be. So that was a challenge for me. It's not something that I competed in college when I was in culinary school.
Yeah.
I mean, not nearly in that intense of an setting, but it was intense in its own right. And so it was just one of those kind of things where it's like, can I still do this?
Oh, I think the answer was yes, though.
Yes.
I think the answer was.
Thank God.
You absolutely did that.
Yeah.
We check out that episode. It's a good episode. You're ready to go into a lightning round? Do you want to?
Yeah, let's do it.
Ready for this?
Okay, all right.
Here we go. In a shout out to the Bon Appetit Foodcast, my first question for you is butter or olive oil?
Butter.
Is it always
butter?
Butter, no question.
Butter,
okay, as much as we can get.
As much is it? Is it a carb?
No,
I need it.
I
think it's a vegetable.
Perfect. It's a vegetable. Butter is a vegetable. You can use it everywhere. In the lightning round, I sometimes ask people about that desert island food, the food that they can eat all the time, anytime. Like, this is my go-to food. I will eat this no matter what. If I just had it yesterday, I'm having it again today. Do you have one of those?
Grilled cheese and Raising Cane's.
And Raising Cane's. There's a lot of comfort going on there.
I
can
don't
see where
go to
is.
Raising Cane's when I leave here two or three times a week. There's something wrong with me.
Fascinating. Yeah. And do you, like, as a chef, then, do you look at Raising Cane's and go, like, I know I can make that sauce. I can duplicate that sauce.
I can.
I'm
not.
I can do the chicken the same way.
I could.
But you want that comfort and you want it.
It's hot.
It's ready to go.
It's fast. And I can eat by the time I leave from there and get home. I'm done eating and I can go right to bed.
Perfect. What about a piece of cooking equipment that you couldn't live without? Is there a, you know, oh, this makes my life so easy.
I just need a good knife.
Yeah.
That's it. A good knife. I can do a lot with that. Nice, sharp, good knife.
Is there a food that you, a food fad that you can totally live without? Like, something that you're seeing in the food world. What is that?
Cake pops.
Cake pops. No more cake pops. Yeah.
Cake pops are gross.
I was going to say, maybe it's like it's the kind of thing like an egg on everything, where it's just fried egg on a burger, fried egg on a pizza, fried
that
egg
too,
on a whatever.
Really, but cake pops gross me out.
I like that.
They really gross me out.
I could
we
do
could have
cake
just
pops as well.
Skipped over that whole genre of things.
Perfect. What aspect of the business do you wish you knew more about, that you wish you had a better handle on? Because entrepreneurship, you know, the cooking side is one thing, right? You've got that side down, but what about the business do you wish you knew more about?
I don't know that I wish I knew more about it, but I wish I had, like, a magic wand to, like, solve it. It's the ever-evolving customer expectations. That's the part that's always, like, the unknown factor. We can plan for everything else, but we cannot plan for that.
For what people are into.
What people are into. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you were just talking when you came in here about a menu change, and menu changes happening today.
Yes.
Is the menu change trying to deal with that? You're trying to
no,
guess
the menu change is more about seasonality and creativity. Like,
oh, okay.
Y'all have to understand that we get tired of making this.
Oh,
stuff.
Sure.
People
oh, yeah.
are like, but I like that sandwich. Okay, well, I've made like 700 of them.
That's
I
right.
literally don't want to smell, see, look, or have anything else to do with it.
Yeah, and if that's the most popular thing.
Also, there are other sandwiches.
Yeah, and if that's the most popular thing and people keep coming in for it, then it's that, you know, you double-edged sword.
Yeah.
You come from a strong family of entrepreneurs. I saw an interview that said that your father built a janitorial service company with more than 300 employees. What role did that have on your mindset in starting down this journey?
I think that watching him and participating in that, I was not disillusioned about what entrepreneurship was. I think a lot of people come into entrepreneurship because they think they're going to be their own boss. And that's not at it at all. Actually, I'm not my own boss. And they think that you get time off and you get to make your schedule and you get to. Successful entrepreneurs are people who deal with extreme personal sacrifice and personal discomfort all of the
all
time.
All the time.
All of the time. And if that's not what you want to do, then I suggest that you don't become an entrepreneur.
Let someone else have the headache and just do a good job for that person.
Yeah.
How about passing along that tradition of either entrepreneurship or cooking to your kids? What is it that you hope you pass along?
I don't necessarily know that they will be entrepreneurs. They might. I think what I would like for them to see is my grit and my perseverance, and then they take on those characteristics, and then they can apply that to anything that they decide that they want to do, and a little bit of discipline. So those are the three things that I would want for them to have. They don't necessarily have to be chefs. And I think if we tie it all the way back to like the prospect, that's what I'm trying to show or trying to work with in this like live action environment where they're seeing us work, is that it takes grit, it takes perseverance, and it takes discipline. Those are the three things. And you have to be consistent in that all the time, even when things get weird.
I could not wrap it up any better than in what you just said. I'm going to say, let's see, first, you're out of the lightning round. Congratulations. Well done. Where can people find you if they want to know more, if they want to
connect? Well, I live
here.
You can find me sleeping on the blue couch. No, I'm just kidding. But also, I'm serious. No. All of our socials are really consistent. It's mine and Chef Shanita, personally. And then all of the stuff for here is The Prospect KC. We keep it real simple. So
real simple.
That it's easy to find us.
Hey, highly recommend. Come down, hang out, have a great cup of coffee and a different sandwich every time.
Absolutely.
Shanita McAfee Bryant, Executive Director and Founder of The Prospect KC. Thanks for being with us on the show.
Thank you guys for having me.
And that is our show. Thanks to our guest, Chef Shanita McAfee Bryant. And thank you for listening to the Small Business Miracles podcast. Remember to subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating and review. Drop us a line on the website at eagadv.com if you have any thoughts. Until then, we'll be out here helping entrepreneurs with another Small Business Miracle.